There are Jews in the world, there are Buddhists, there are Hindus and Mormons, and then there are those that follow Mohammed's, but I've never been one of them.
Fie Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem.
Oh Lord, oh you are so big, so absolutely huge.
Do you think maybe he's compensating for something?
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
What did we learn?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I'm going to do this in my car. The sounds of the birds that distract me, traffic driving by, people blasting their music. We're going to give it a shot. Why? Because it is that beautiful, and I am far from home, and I want to get this done before I go to work. So let's do this on this Pentecost Sunday. I want to tell you a story. Now, the author of numerous self-help books and psychologist Wayne Dyer describes attending his 20-year high school reunion. He ran across a former classmate at the reunion who he had been secretly crushing on. Even in high school, she was attractive and self-assured, but Dyer never had the guts to propose to her or to ask her out. And to his astonishment, the woman he had wanted to date for so long revealed to Dyer at the reunion that she had a secret crush on him the entire time they were in high school together. She would have been so happy if he had asked her out. He had been denied the chance of a lifetime just because of his adolescent fear of rejection. And perhaps this is a silly example, but isn't that what anxiety can do to us sometimes? It prevents access to fantastic opportunities. The opposite of faith that Christ has called us to is fear. In today's lesson from the Gospel of John, we learned that on the evening of the first day of the week, when the disciples were gathered with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And then he displayed his hands and his side to them. And when the disciples first beheld the Lord, they were ecstatic. Now, how many of us can really relate to these stressed out and terrified disciples, huh? These followers had experienced one hell of a weekend. Can we blame them for anxiously pacing in that upper room? John claims the doors were closed out of fear of Jewish leaders. How awful is it whenever the church's doors are closed out of fear? A lot of churches in this country used to be open all the time. Today, I can't even think of one church that would take that chance. I don't know what we're all really afraid of. I mean, the people are there, which they actually really aren't anymore. But I guess we're terrified that someone might take something from the church with them. However, the doors have been closed in the history of this country a lot sooner. Now that I'm thinking about it, hell, some of our parents, maybe even grandparents, you know, definitely grandparents, they could tell us of a time that those doors were closed to people of different ethnicities. Now today, I guess, if we really consider it, some church doors are closed if, you know, you're not straight, if you're not a he or a she. Isn't it so sad when fear, that root of all discrimination, prevents a church from being open? How awful it is when fear closes one's heart's door. Now, individuals often experience that, don't we? Something out there is just too dangerous. So we withdraw into our own personal universes. Yeah. So do you keep your doors closed out of fear? You know, I think maybe that the spread of rumors in Jerusalem at that time of Jesus' crucifixion may have been one of the reasons those disciples were hiding behind locked doors. According to John, the reason they were hiding in the first place was out of fear of the Jewish leaders. And the Bible makes no mention of these anxieties being legitimate. There's no proof that Jesus' suffering and death were the only violent acts committed that weekend. But there were undoubtedly murmurs, right? Aren't there always in that kind of way? These rumors, they spread whenever there's a disagreement between competing groups. Unease grows, reason is put on hold and abandoned. Sometimes the effects of these rumors are minor. Take, for instance, the Tonight Show host Johnny Carson once recounted a report circling in nearby newspapers that local retailers were running low on toilet paper in 1973. Kind of sound familiar? Now, granted, it was a comedic monologue. It wasn't, like, really serious. Do you wish to speculate, though, on what actually fucking happened? Let me tell you. In case the rumors were true, millions of people that week hurried out who watched the show and loaded up on that toilet paper. It was widespread across the country. Even the mere rumors of a potential scarcity of toilet paper caused one to materialize across the United States. Sometimes, rumors might give us a self-fulfilling prophecy. There are widespread rumors of a toilet paper shortage in the nation. As a result, that rumor inspires, and people rush to buy toilet paper. Before long, there almost was a shortage. Occasionally, the influence of unfounded rumors can lead us to those worst tragedies. For many years, in the Chattanooga Free Times Free Press, had a famous religious writer. She was the late columnist and novelist Nell Mooney. Miss Mooney shared several poignant experiences from her own life in her writings. One of her tales takes place as a student at a tiny liberal arts college in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Amy Pruitt was a female student at that college. Now, Amy was a junior who had transferred from a top East Coast school. According to Mooney, she and her pals felt that Amy must have failed to succeed at that posh Eastern school, and they concluded that Amy probably felt like this that little college down in Greensboro was just a pushover, and so she transferred. But Amy's engagement in class disproved all their presumptions. She was incredibly intelligent, fantastically talented, but that did not affect how her classmates treated her. See, although Amy was incredibly skilled, her popularity was low, and neither Mooney nor her friends did much to change that. In fact, they purposefully kept Amy out of their exclusive social and friendship groups. Mooney later concluded that their actions were motivated more by xenophobia and envy than anything else. See, they envied her dark, seductive appearance, as well as the fact that she had a fantastic physique. Her fine clothes, which she appeared to have an abundance of, did nothing to increase their envy. They mockingly referred to her as being overly dressed. And Amy's northern accent and direct, no-nonsense demeanor were undoubtedly unwelcome in that tiny college in the South. See, those young ladies have been taught that women should avoid being assertive and instead be soft-spoken, courteous, subtle. Amy's life did not improve over time. Because she left school after classes every Friday and didn't come back till late Sunday night, those rumors began to spread. After Thanksgiving, there was a nasty rumor that Amy was having an affair with an older man who picked her up every Friday and brought her back to college in the late hours of the following Sunday. It was assumed he was a married man. And Amy received those lovely clothes and spending money, quote, for services rendered. Amy and her classmates were separated by an unseen barrier that grew increasingly higher. Then just after Christmas, word quickly went out and through the girls' dorm and school. See, Amy Pruitt had taken too many sleeping pills. She was in critical condition at the hospital in Greensboro. The students were gathered by the school psychologist who revealed the truth to them. That psychologist stated that Amy's mother had cancer and was close to death. At university, Amy was friendless and lonely. During her first year of college there, she was the sole student assigned to a single room. Honestly, the best description of this all comes from Nell Mooney herself. Amy, the intelligent but reserved only child of well-off parents, had come home from Vassar during her mother's final illness. She transferred to their school for that reason, leaving her friends and dealing with her mother's impending death were both traumatizing, and it became almost impossible when she met our walls of prejudice and hostility, Mooney continued. But it was the ugly rumor that pushed her over the edge. After all, that older man who transported her to and from campus each week was her father. Yeah. As you'd probably guess, after that realization, there was widespread outpouring of agony and sorrow on campus. Fortunately, Amy had made a full recovery, giving her new classmates, who are now her friends, an opportunity to reintegrate her into their social circles and hearts. However, Nell Mooney never lost sight of the destructive potential rumors. Idle rumors can ruin a life. They can incite a revolution. They can use terror to entrap good people behind closed doors. And although there's no proof that the Jewish authorities meant to harm those disciples, there were rumors. And they alone were enough to shatter the sense of security for those early disciples of Jesus. Now today, we got blogs, podcasts, TikToks, and social media posts of one kind or another. So many sources out there known for spreading lies readily believed, which are intended to increase people's anxieties. Hell, there's an entire news network that does it. All day, every day, just watch Fox and see the fear. That's what it should be. Fox, feel the fear. And you know what? Fear is frequently illogical. For instance, did you know you have a higher chance of dying from a stroke? In fact, it's 11 times higher than your chance of ever being, like, murdered. Can you imagine how much better shape we'd all be if we were as cautious about controlling our food and our health as we are about making sure that front door is locked? That spread of misinformation is the first reason those disciples were hiding behind closed doors. And second, because they had temporarily lost their faith. So they were hiding behind closed doors. See, Jesus had not enlisted agnostics or atheists for this. They were not religious experts, granted, but they were undoubtedly familiar with the Psalms. In their synagogues, they presumably memorized the phrase, "The Lord is my shepherd." They knew Moses, Joshua, and the other Old Testament heroes. They knew that the Lord was their fortress of salvation and that he would never leave them. So what was that faith they once had? That faith that kept them alive since they were babes. Additionally, let's remember they'd been around Jesus for 3 years for some of them. How many times had Jesus rebuked their fears? There are 366 times that Jesus says, "Fear not," in the verses of the Bible. That's one for each day of the year, plus one extra for leap years, just in case, you know? Had some of those fear not gotten to those early disciples? When a crisis arose, they resumed their previous behavior before Jesus had urged them to join him. What the fuck is their faith? It's kind of like that young child riding the bus home from Sunday school. He's very pleased with the card that he had been given in class that day. He had a picture, and the words said, "Have faith in God." That card fell from his grasp for a moment and fluttered out the window, much to his dismay, and he shouted, "Stop the bus! I lost my faith in God!" One of the adult passengers laughed and remarked on the purity of childhood as the boy got off the bus and went to get his card as the driver pulled the vehicle to a halt. But a more astute adult said, "All of us would be a lot better off if we were more..." Brain reset. Let's try that again. A more astute adult said, "All of us would be better off if we were that concerned about our faith." Yeah, see, we frequently experience something similar under stress. We momentarily lose our faith and resume behaving in ways inconsistent with the gospel. And although we are aware that faith is our best ally, we nonetheless act in this manner. Those who believe in a just and good God never give up, supposedly. They're consistent pessimists. Such trust not only makes us more bearable, but is helpful in overcoming some of our worst concerns. Previously noted by Henry Ward Beecher, every day has two handles. We can take hold of it with the handle of anxiety or the handle of faith. The handle of concern, or anxiety, was in the hands of those disciples. Due to the spread of untrue rumors, they were sheltering behind closed doors. They had temporarily lost their faith, so they were hiding. However, I think their primary motivation for sheltering behind closed doors was a sense of abandonment. There's something about the presence of the teacher, that gave them a sense of calm, even in the presence of imminent danger. There was that time when he calmed the storm and walked out of the boat where they were huddled. The first words he spoke were these, "Fear not, it is I." Cool, so where was he now? Crucified. Body stolen from the tomb, absent from them in the flesh and the spirit. There they were, sheep without a shepherd, children whose parents had abandoned them and left them to face the cold, cruel world alone. According to psychologists, this is among children's greatest anxieties. Parents dropping kids off for the first time at the church nursery or at day school or school itself. Parents have to reassure these kids so much. Many kids harbor a deep-seated worry that their parents are never going to come back. We live that fear for the rest of our lives. One of the most detrimental effects of divorce on certain children is this: why did such and such parent leave me? Why do they not still love me? I mean, when asked to deal with the death of a parent, teenagers experience much the same anguish, though we're typically unaware of it. That emotion follows us through our lives. A recent widow or widower frequently experiences an overwhelming sense of abandonment as well. The experience of life without God is similar. However, luckily, God has not forsaken his people. Got another story for you. The tale is set in a small Polish village when the Nazis arrived. The Third Reich's army stormed into the community while everybody was attending church on Sunday. The troops entered the church, told everyone to leave. The building was then set on fire by the soldiers. The troops then turned their firearms toward the... The troops then turned their firearms towards the assembled crowd. However, rather than cowering in fear, These folks started to sing, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." You know, that hymn written by Dr. Martin Luther. He was a German. And these German soldiers and members of the church all grew up singing this hymn. While waiting the gunshots, the crowd sang one verse before moving on to the next. They generally believed that they would be hearing the sounds of rifles silence them, but no shots were fired. When they finally turned and faced those German soldiers surrounding them, they were shocked to see the guns pointed down and tears flowing from every stern Nazi face. The soldiers slowly turned around and got back into their trucks and jeeps one by one, then two by two. From that tiny settlement, they withdrew. A singing congregation of devoted stood outside their burning church when that army left. The disciples felt abandoned and hid behind closed doors. But they weren't left behind because the good news. Give it in here, you know. The closed doors of our lives can be broken down by Jesus. Pay attention to the reading from the Gospel of John. The disciples were gathered inside closed doors that evening on the first day of the week out of fear of the Jews. When Jesus entered and stood among them, saying, "Peace be with you." After saying this, he displayed his hands and his side in the audience. When the disciples finally saw the Lord, they rejoiced. The fear that so readily overcomes us has the finest remedy I'm aware of. It is to feel the presence of the resurrected Jesus. To see the signs of his love for us on his hands and side. And to hear him exclaim, as he did those first disciples, "Peace be with you." Well, that's all I have for today. I'm actually going to leave church now. Go home, drop some stuff off, and get to work. I love you all. And hey, if you're in my Uber, I'm glad you're there. And even if you're not, still love you, fuckers. Peace out. Talk at you next week.